having me. I'm very excited to give this talk because lately I've been giving a lot of talks about fault-tolerant resource estimation, which can get pretty depressing and pessimistic. This is exciting work. This is work that was done last summer while I was doing an internship at Microsoft, and it's also done in collaboration with some people at Sandia. And essentially what we've done is developed a very broadly applicable characterization or framework for characterization of quantum systems that we called operational quantum tomography. Now, I don't think I really have to spend much time explaining what tomography is, but just very briefly, in general, state tomography, given an unknown state, how do we learn what it is? What we can do is take a set of measurements that are informationally complete. Now, I'm going to focus in this whole talk about single-qubit systems. So, of course, I've shown here the Bloch sphere, and the measurements that you have to take are the Pauli measurements. There are only three of them, and once you take those, you get some probabilities. You can get a state vector or a density matrix back. Similarly, in quantum process tomography, how do we learn what some unknown quantum process is doing? Well, we look at how it acts on states that we know already and see where it sends them. And we can do state tomography on that, and then we can reverse engineer this process. Now, characterization of quantum systems is especially important right now with all of the noisy machines that are out there. If we don't know what they're doing, we can't exactly make them better. But there's a big problem with state and quantum tomography as they're typically done. And that problem is they assume that state preparation is perfect and also that the measurements that they execute are perfect. Now, you should ask yourself, is that a good assumption? Clearly no, because otherwise I would not be here. State preparation and measurement are also noisy processes. And if we do our tomography under the assumption that they're not, those results are going to be inconsistent with the true behavior of the system. So is there another way to learn about our system? So people have developed something called gate set tomography. It's a way of learning about your system that treats everything you can do to it on equal footing. We're going to learn about state preparation and measurement, as well as all of the processes we can do at the same time. And the way we're going to look at our quantum system is as this cute little box with a bunch of buttons on it. Each of those buttons represents something you can do to your system, like prepare it, perform a measurement, or perform some arbitrary operations. And on the top of the box is this little light that's going to turn on depending on the outcome of the measurement. Now, if you open up the box, it's like opening a present. It's full of linear algebra. Under the hood, these operators, the buttons are all represented by super operators. If you haven't seen a super operator before, essentially you're taking things like density matrices and unitaries and unrolling them into a much larger space. In this case, the density matrix is going to turn into a 4x1 vector, and the super operators that represent unitaries will turn into 4x4 matrices that act on those density matrix vectors. So one important assumption that we are going to make is that every time we press a button, it does the same thing. These super operators have some unknown form, but that unknown form is constant. And what we want to do is learn what these super operators are so we can predict the behavior of our system. So how do we go about learning them? Well, we're going to push a bunch of buttons, but we're going to do it in a smart way. What a gate set tomography experiment looks like is a sequence of buttons like this. We prepare the state, we perform some arbitrary set of operations from our chosen buttons, just move the cursor, and then we perform a measurement, and we do each of these experiments multiple times, and we look at the frequency with which the light turned on. And we're going to reconstruct the superoperators by doing that for a whole bunch of different experiments. But one of the problems is we don't know anything about the system. We're not making any assumptions about spam. We don't even know that the buttons do what we think they do. Maybe like a colleague in a competing lab is the one who gave you the box and none of the buttons do anything. How are we supposed to do tomography if that's the case? So what we're going to do is set a frame of reference by using what we call a set of fiducial experiments. What these are going to be is a set of, in this case for a single qubit, four little experiments where we press only one or two buttons, or in this case, no buttons, and those are going to form the frame of reference for the rest of our experiments. Yes? In principle, I guess they don't have to be, they just have to be a quantum channel that's like trace preserving or completely positive. So the only restriction on these fiducials that we have is that they have to be informationally complete. And I'm going to explain what informationally complete means in this context in a couple slides. So what we're going to do to reconstruct our superoperators is create these three kind of intermediate mathematical objects that I've called E, F, and G tilde. Now, E is going to be a 4x1 vector that's created by performing an experiment using each of the four fiducials as the button that we press between the state prep and measurement. This matrix F is going to be formed by taking all possible combinations of two fiducials. It's going to be 4x4. And then we have this set of G tildes. There's going to be one for each of the G buttons. And those are going to be very similar to this F matrix, except in between the fiducials, we're going to also push the button that represents G. And what those elements are, they look like, here you can see they're just inner products. But what these values represent are the probabilities of the light turning on given that sequence. And you can see that just by using the Born rule. Here's an example sequence. And given those superoperators, that's the probability of the light turning on. And that's what we're going to put in the matrix. And to do gate set tomography, what we're going to do for this special case that I'm going to introduce first of linear inversion gate set tomography is we're going to do all of those experiments with the products of two fiducials, one fiducial gate, another fiducial. We're going to look at the results, and then we're going to use those frequencies to populate E tilde, F tilde, and G tilde. Now, in principle, and this is just looking at it analytically, these are the expressions for the elements of those matrices expressed as inner products that involve the superoperators. It's called linear inversion gate set tomography because, again, in principle, analytically, you can invert those expressions to get the superoperators back. And we are learning, though, our superoperators up to this additional matrix B, where if everything is perfect, we can write B like this, but we're doing an experiment, and in the limit of finite samples, it's not going to be perfect. And this is where I'm going to define informationally complete. See this guy F? Has to be invertible. So as long as those fiducial sequences form an F that's invertible, we're good to go. They don't necessarily have to be an informationally complete set of measurements in the traditional sense, since again, we don't know anything at all about what our buttons are doing. We just need to be able to invert that matrix in order to perform this step to get these expressions for the superoperators. But there's a really big problem with this, and that problem is that matrix B. So we can reconstruct the superoperators, but there was always this B here in the way. And the problem with that is B is not a quantity that's accessible experimentally. Because if you look at what the probability of a light turning on is for a given sequence, that's going to be the same if you multiply everything by B. So what we say is that B is an unknown gauge transformation. And so if we can't access B, then we can't find the true superoperators. We only know like the gauge orbit of those superoperators. B could have been any possible value. I showed it with a nice spinning wheel. We don't know what it is, though. We just know B times the superoperators. So that's a problem. I told you that we wanted to get superoperators. What can we do about this? Well, there's two options. One option is to gauge fix, and basically what you do is you say, okay, this is what my superoperators should have looked like. I'm pretty sure my setup was decent. And then what you do is you solve an optimization problem to figure out which B will bring whatever you got out of your experiments closest to the superoperator that you thought it would be. And this is something that you have to do consistently with all of the gates in your set. And in general, this is going to be a very difficult optimization problem. It might be expensive, it might be unstable. But furthermore, it requires you to assume a form for your superoperators. And we said already that this is a bad idea because they could be doing anything. So option two, and this is where our work comes in, is, well, why don't we do tomography focusing only on the gauge-independent quantities instead? So what are gauge-independent quantities? Superoperators are gauge-dependent. But these guys here, these things that we got out of the experiments, those are gauge-independent. Because you saw that you can calculate the sequence probability with the Bs or without the Bs, and you get the same thing. So this is a set of gauge-independent quantities. And furthermore, we can use those gauge-independent quantities in the exact same way we would use the superoperators to predict the behavior of our system. You can compute the probability of the light turning on for a given sequence by taking the trace of this product, but then you can also put the Bs in here. And then if you, I guess I could show the definitions again, but it's not that important. You can turn these into just expressions in terms of these tilde matrices. So now we can calculate the sequence probability using only these quantities that we got out in the experiment. So if we can learn those E tilde, F tilde, and the set of G tilde, we can predict the outcome of any future experiment. And what we call this is the operational representation. So how do we actually learn it? Now, this is a conference about machine learning, so this is where the machine learning comes in. What we're going to do is do Bayesian inference. I think Bayes' rule has already been showed this week, but given some prior distribution and some data, you can create a posterior distribution that tells you about the likelihood each model was to have given you that data in the first place. So what we're going to do is create a prior distribution over some large number of these hypothetical E, F, and G tilde, and then we're going to do experiments, just like we would do normally in gate set tomography, but we're going to use the outcomes of those experiments now to update a prior distribution and get a posterior distribution, and this is what we call operational quantum tomography. Now, how this is implemented in practice is using a particle filter algorithm. Essentially, we create a whole bunch of different potential values of these E tilde, F tilde, and G tilde. This giant particle cloud, one of them is true. Well, not one of the particles, but there is a true value. And then we do an experiment. We do a Bayesian update. We use that as our next prior distribution. We do another experiment update. And eventually, you hope that all of those particles are going to converge around the true value. And you can calculate the mean of that posterior, and then you can use that as a guess for your operational representation. So I should convince you that this works, and I'll do that by showing you two examples. The first is Ramsey interferometry. Now, this isn't state or process tomography. This is a different type of characterization procedure where you're trying to learn the Rabi oscillation frequency of a qubit. This is just the frequency with which, if you put that qubit in a driving field, it's going to oscillate between 0 and 1. And that's like an intrinsic frequency of the system, and we want to learn that. Now, why do we want to learn that is because in a physical implementation of a qubit, you're typically performing unitary operations by applying electromagnetic pulses of specific durations. And knowing the Rabi oscillation frequency essentially tells you how long you should be applying that pulse for. And the way the procedure works is you will prepare your state, you'll apply a pi over 2 pulse in the x direction, and then you'll let it evolve for some amount of time. You apply another pi over 2 pulse, and then you measure. And you're going to do this many, many times, and you're going to do it for varying times t. And at the end of the day, you can infer what this frequency should be. So what we're going to do now is turn this into a procedure that can be put into this operational quantum tomography framework. So we're going to turn the Ramsey experiment into a little button box. We're going to have a button that prepares 0, one that performs the measurement, one that performs pi over 2 rotation around x. And then this is a bit of a complication. We have time. So what evolution is going to be is basically this discretized button that we're going to just repeatedly push to represent time evolution. So what the operational tomography framework experiments are going to look like is prepare the state, apply the pi over 2 pulse, push delta t a bunch of times, pulse again, and then measure. So I'm going to walk you through the set of steps that we use to actually get this guess for the representation out. So the first thing that we have to do is choose a prior. Now, the objects that we're working with are these operational representations. These are these 3 or 4 whatever matrices full of numbers that represent sequence probabilities. The only thing you can really say about those numbers in advance is that they should all be positive because they're all probabilities. But there isn't really an obvious way to create those objects in such a way that they will give you like a physical state out. So instead of working directly with those representations, what we do first is choose a prior over things that we do know how to create and how to work with, and then we're going to turn those into the gauge-independent quantities. So what we're going to do is choose priors over the superoperators expressed in some gauge. We're free to choose that gauge as long as it's the same for all of the superoperators. So for example, what we can do is say, okay, I think that this button that does a rotation around pi over 2 and x is going to be, you know, maybe some over-rotated value. So we can choose prior distribution for that button by writing it like this with some additional parameter that gets added that gets pulled from a normal distribution. And we can do that for every button on the box. And then using those, we can convert into the gauge independent form. But to do that, we're going to need fiducial sequences. So that's the next step. Now, unfortunately, there's not really a good way to choose fiducials. Like, you have to figure out what works, basically. And again, the only condition that you need is that this matrix F has to be invertible. And so the ones that we chose were doing nothing, applying Rx once, applying it twice, and then applying a single delta T push in between. And what's important about these fiducials is that this is a normal Ramsey interferometry experiment, pulse, wait some time, pulse again. These ones are not. And that's going to come in a bit later. So now we have priors over the superoperators, and now we have fiducial sequences. And what we can do with those is run them through this linear inversion gate set tomography procedure, where we took the inner products to calculate the values of E tilde, F tilde, G tilde. And we can do that for a whole bunch of different guesses. In this case, I used 20,000 particles. And then the priors that I used were a depolarized version of SPAM. Again, this over-rotated pi over 2 in X rotation. And then this delta T operation, what it ends up being is a rotation in the Z direction that depends on the Rabi frequency. We don't know anything about that. We're going to assume that it's somewhere between 0 and 1. And then we're going to find out what it is. So we can combine those, turn them into E tilde, F tilde, and G tilde for a whole bunch of different samples. And then we're going to perform the Bayesian inference by doing experiments. So the experiments that I did for this were basically just Ramsey interferometry experiments of increasing length. So I started with 2 pushes of delta T, and then I did all the way up to 50 pushes after each experiment for some number of shots. I updated the distribution according to Bayes' rule. And this is what we get. So what this shows is the sequence probabilities for the Ramsey interferometry experiment for both the true value of the superoperators and the operational representation, which I did the experiments, I did them simulated, just sampled the value from the prior and said this is the truth. So these are the sequence probabilities for the sequences that I trained on, but then these here are an extension out to much, much greater number of DT presses. And so what you should do is compare, like, how close did our predictions get? And, well, they got very close because there is a red line there. It's just so good that it's hiding underneath. In order to actually quantify how good this is, what we can do is use something like a prediction loss. Plotted here is the quadratic loss between the probability that it should have been versus the probability that we got out of the procedure. And you can see that the numbers are very small, but obviously this is going to start to grow as you go out to longer and longer sequences that you didn't train on. This plot I like to show just because there's lots of colors. So what I showed here is the posterior mean being used to compute those sequence probabilities. But remember, the distribution is this cloud of particles. And each particle is going to be slightly different from the other particles, and so it's going to evolve over time in a different way. So what this shows is the trajectories of, I believe, 50 different particles. And you can see that at the beginning, they're all very, very close, but then they start to diverge the further out you get. So why is this interesting? Ramsey interferometry is a pretty straightforward characterization procedure. Well, it's interesting because it's not something that you could have done using normal gait set tomography. I'd mentioned those fiducials are not Ramsey experiments. If you try to do it with only Ramsey type experiments where you pulse applied delta T, so number of times pulse again, you don't get an F matrix that's informationally complete. But what operational quantum tomography allows you to do is incorporate prior information using those fiducial experiments and then use that as the basis to then, you know, feed data from the actual Ramsey experiments to get the representation out. And we were actually very surprised that it worked for this in the first place. We thought this would work for state tomography and process tomography, but it ends up being very applicable. So what we've done with it so far is Ramsey interferometry, but also we've done state tomography, we've done process tomography, and we've also applied it to randomized benchmarking. And we get very good results in each case. So what I've been working on lately is to actually do this with real data. So one of our co-authors from Sandia, a couple of years ago, they put out this paper where they did a different version of gait set tomography that they called long sequence gait set tomography on an actual trapped ion qubit. Now, how long sequence gait set tomography works is it starts by just doing this linear inversion gait set tomography, but then it's going to start doing additional experiments, kind of just like what we do in OQT. Except it's not going to work in a gauge-independent framework, it's going to work in a gauge-dependent framework. So it's going to gauge fix, and then it's going to continuously improve using maximum likelihood estimation, and then at the end it's going to give you a gauge or a gauge fixed set of superoperators. So what they're, in our framework, what their experiment would look like is a box with five buttons, one of them prepares the state, one measures, and then they had three different things that they could do to their system. They could apply a pi over 2 pulse in X or in Y, or they can do an identity. So because this was actually experimental data that we were working with, the choice of prior is kind of an issue. The superoperators that you get out, the gauge fixed ones, they're very noisy, so they aren't just going to be slightly over-rotated versions of a standard matrix, there's a bunch of additional noise. So what I tried to do for this is use the Ginnerber ensemble to add noise to the over-rotated versions. And in the software, which we'll eventually release, I've made it so that you can make a prior by like stacking all different kinds of errors to make something that's very noisy potentially. In this case, we just overlaid it with some normally distributed random values. And that's what we did for all three of the gates. And in this case, I've done something very bad. I'm working on this still. I assumed that spam was perfect. But we still end up getting very good results. So I did this using the set of experiments that were exactly the same as were used in the long sequence gate set tomography paper. And so what this plot shows is the sequence probability when you press a button just like multiple times, like thousands of times, like how well can you still do out that far? In this case, it's the identity, and you can see that the perfect value, the sequence probability is always zero, but the more times you do it with the reconstructed versions, the worse it gets. And this is the same kind of plot, but for pressing the pi over 2 y rotation many, many times. And you can see, so this is the competing implementation. It's called Pigsty, which is a really cute name. It's Python gate set tomography implementation, I believe. And you can see that the OQT results and the Pigsty results are very, very comparable, even though we didn't do any of this gauge fixing. And the second plot compares that just by showing the total variation distance from the experimental data. So in conclusion, operational tomography is allowing us to characterize a whole bunch of different quantum systems and encompasses a lot of different characterization procedures, including some that we didn't expect. And basically, if we learn this operational representation, we can predict the future behavior of the system, and we can do it by using prior information, and we can do it without any of the gauge-related difficulties that are suffered by, for example, normal gate set tomography. So the next steps are going to, of course, be scaling up to multi-qubit systems. Two qubits is, I don't know if we really need to go higher, but that would be the next step. And then furthermore, gate set tomography, I only showed you one state preparation and one measurement, But in principle, you can have multiple buttons for each spam, and you should still be able to do the same thing in each case. So thank you, and also thank my collaborators and Microsoft for putting up with me for a couple months last summer.
Well, thanks very much, Olivia. Questions?
Hey, thank you for the talk. I have two questions. So one is, like, one of the limitations of tomography is scalability. So how do you expect operational quantum tomography to scale? The second is the link between, what do you mean that you apply operational quantum tomography to randomized benchmarking? Do you replace Clifford's with these fiducial gates, or can you comment more about that link?
Yeah, so I'll answer your second question first. Basically, what we did is we did this gate set tomography framework on the Cliffords, on Hadamard and the phase gate. We did a bunch of experiments to reconstruct them, and then we used those to do randomized benchmarking, and we still see the survival probability curve. It looks like it's supposed to, as if you were just doing a normal randomized benchmarking experiment. To answer your first question, is a bit more difficult. So all of this is built on top of a particle filter algorithm, which is going to scale linearly in the amount of data you feed it. But then you run into the issue of how many particles do you need, and that's going to depend, for example, on how informative your prior is and how many gates you need to reconstruct. And then, as well, like, you have to choose how many experiments do I need to train on, and that's just going to depend, I guess, on what you want to know about your system. Like, do you care about predicting the behavior out to like 200 DT presses, or do you only care up to say 50? And you would choose your experiments based on what you want to know. I don't have like a big O notation number, but it depends on a lot of things.
Thank you.
More questions? Let's thank the speaker again.